Firing up the projector, got the big screen lit up. I'm in the big boy recliner chair. I gotta watch some movies tonight. I've got to go to my Netflix queue, the instant watch queue, because there are a couple of movies that are expiring, that are leaving the instant watch category here at the end of the month. Now I get a message that Netflix is currently unavailable. What the hell? Well, that's not good on a Friday night. I was up late last night. I couldn't get to sleep, so about 3 o'clock I was watching Anger Management, the first two episodes of the Charlie Sheen sitcom on, what is it, on FX? In the genre of sitcoms, it was probably better than his old show and better than 95% of the stuff of Barry Corbin. Not a big marquee name, but he's always worth the price of admission. He plays this old guy in the therapy session named Ed. Selma Blair, nothing wrong with looking at her. What's her name? Brett Butler was a bartender. Shawnee Smith, who played the kind of ditzy receptionist on that Becker show, the one with Ted Danson playing the doctor. Well, she has grown up or matured and looks absolutely, you know, normal now. She plays the ex-wife. Anyway, it wasn't that bad. You know, I laughed out loud a couple times. You know, it's nothing that I'm going to... I just tried Netflix again. Currently unavailable. Why don't I go to Roku? That's number two input on your program, and see if Netflix will come up on the Roku. What do you think? Let's go back up. Instant queue. I gotta go to, you know, there's a, we're unable to connect a something's up with Netflix. Oh no. Yeah, got the same kind of message here on the Roku as I did on the Apple TV. This is not good. It's checking connection. That's not a bad sign. So, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to plug in, I know you're all worn out on the Affordable Health Care Act. But last night, Rachel Maddow on her MSNBC show did a fantastic job, and I'm not surprised, of putting the whole thing in context. You're probably not aware. I wasn't. But, you know, you haven't had worried about health care. You got a job, you know, companies. But, man, there are people in dire straits, and she hooked up with some of them. And it kind of put the whole thing into perspective. So since I can't go to Netflix here, I got tons of other stuff I could watch, I guess, but why don't I throw it over to Rachel Maddow?
Thanks to you again for joining us for this hour on what is a historic news day for the richest country on the planet. The United States of America is the largest economy in the world, the richest country on the planet, and that sometimes makes it hard to believe that this has to happen here.
What brings you here?
Can't afford to go to a regular doctor, and they advertise this on TV, so I called in, you know, to get the way I can come get my blood pressure medication done, anti-anxiety medication, that way I can get it refilled.
How often do you go to a doctor?
Least as possible.
You haven't been very often?
No, can't afford to go to an emergency room. It costs too much.
You drove 200 miles to get here?
Yes, sir.
And slept in this parking lot for 7 or more hours?
Yes, sir.
Just to have this done?
Yes. I've been in some very excruciating pain.
There is no shame in seeking health care.
No, you're right. You know, it really... I am sad that we are the wealthiest nation in the world and we don't take care of our own. So, but it will be okay.
free clinics like those, with Americans lining up for days, and in some days camping out for a chance to see a doctor or a dentist because there's no other way in this country to get care. That is hard to understand for the richest country on earth. In Alabama, just last month, in a part of the state that's called the Black Belt for its fertile, dark, rich soil, Alabama last month welcomed the United States military to come in and set up a clinic to provide basic health care to Alabama residents. Over less than 2 weeks, military doctors treated more than 12,000 people, 12,000 Americans, in an area with few doctors and a multitude of medical problems. Aside from general health care screening and nutrition counseling, military doctors are fitting patients for eyeglasses and pulling teeth by the dozens. Because there isn't anywhere else, there isn't any other way for these Americans to get just basic care. We don't have a system for that in America. Part of the reason the military has started doing this kind of thing, not just in Alabama, but in Mississippi and Arkansas and other places, is because it is good training for our military. The Associated Press, writing up this event in Alabama, Operation Black Belt, noting that by doing these clinics, our servicemen and women, quote, learn to set up health clinics and other projects and deal with large numbers of people, just as they might do after a natural disaster or in a foreign country. Now, to be clear, we don't have to do foreign disaster aid-style clinics like this because there has been some kind of disaster in these places. The disaster here is just the normal status quo. Access to health care in parts of the United States, and for many millions of Americans, is an appropriate dress rehearsal for the U.S. military training to respond to earthquakes and floods in the developing world. We are a rich country, but we have a really profligate, wasteful, inefficient, poorly run health care system that does not work. And it not only doesn't work for people for whom it doesn't work, it doesn't work for us as a country. I mean, look at this. This is what Australia spends per capita on healthcare, and Canada as well. Now, I think we've also got Germany and the Netherlands there. Here's New Zealand and the United Kingdom. These are the per capita healthcare costs. And here's the United States. We spend double what other modern, well-off, industrialized nations spend on healthcare. And for the privilege of paying twice as much as everybody else, we get something those other countries just don't have. We get 30 million people with no health coverage, no access to a regular doctor, no way to get something checked out before it gets serious. Tens of millions of Americans dependent on begging at the emergency room or maybe camping out overnight for charity care. And even if you do have coverage, as a country, we're not getting great care compared to other like countries. We get a worse life expectancy than everybody else. We get fewer doctors per capita. We get fewer hospital beds per capita. We're ranked second to last on quality of care. Part of the reason it's not working right is that the system we have got in our country was never designed to be a system. During World War II, when the nation was 110% devoted to the war effort and industrial production was turning to wartime purposes and wartime wage controls and price controls limited the way that businesses could compete for workers who they desperately needed and who were in short supply, businesses then started offering health insurance as an extra perk to try to attract workers. The idea of the population being insured through private insurance routed through who your employer is an accident. Over time, we've kept that accident, and we've tried to patch together fixes to work around the worst implications of that accident. For the elderly who aren't working, so they're not going to get covered by any employer, we came up with Medicare. For the very poor or for the disabled who also aren't working or who are working at jobs so low wage that they'll never offer benefits, we came up with Medicaid. For veterans to whom the nation promises health care as part of a rather sacred deal we make with them in exchange for them agreeing to die for the country if asked to do so. For veterans, there's the VA health system. For people who get laid off and who are on their way to their next job, but they just need a bridge to keep their coverage while they're between employers, a president named Ronald Reagan signed something into law called COBRA. COBRA lets you extend your old health insurance after you've left your old company. For kids who are unlucky enough to have their parents uninsured or to not be covered on their parents' insurance for some reason, there is a health insurance program that's specific to kids. It's called SCHIP. And all of those fixes arranged by the government, all of those fixes do work in their own way for the people they're designed to serve. Honestly, COBRA kind of sucks because it's really expensive, but everything else works. Medicare in particular is beloved, and it is provided with much lower overhead costs than the private insurance system. But for everybody who's not covered by one of those policy patches that we've come up with, one of those fixes, the system has just been still based on that initial accidental non-system of private insurance through the place where you work. And that system means very, very expensive care. It means out-of-control, rising, and unpredictable costs for American businesses who are providing that coverage, which is a responsibility that, frankly, their international competitors do not have. And for families, or God forbid, for individuals who are trying to find coverage or paying their side of that coverage, costs are just out of control. It is not a real system. It is a crazy quilt patchwork that does not work for the country. Even the people it does work for, it doesn't work for you because of the pointless drag this non-system is on our economy as a country. After Democrats trying and failing to reform this mess in the 1990s, and Republicans rejoicing at that failure, and the problem just still getting worse, when the new Democratic president and Congress were elected in 2008, they decided to try again, and they did it. And you know what? They did it in the most conservative way possible, a cautious, centrist, tested approach. They used as a template the Republican plan from 1993, a plan that had been implemented in one U.S. state by the most likely next Republican presidential nominee. But even with all those Republican and bipartisan branches extended, even following the most small-c conservative possible path to reform, they got no Republican help to pass it. Republicans then turned to the conservative majority U.S. Supreme Court, arguing that the policy they themselves had championed for decades should now be seen as unconstitutional, if not tyrannical. Well, today, of course, as you may have heard, the court said no to that. The court put a rest to that. And so we've got reform. We have a restrained, incremental reform that keeps in place that accidental patchwork private insurance system, but reforms it. It essentially trades between the government and those private insurance companies a deal, an agreement by the companies to lower costs in exchange for those companies getting millions more customers, millions more people covered by private insurance. It is a pretty small C conservative reform, but even that was almost politically impossible. Almost. Now, a few practical, pretty non-ideological, forward-thinking states like Vermont and Montana have been talking about trying to move their states to an even more cogent system, to a single-payer system that gets rid of the expensive bureaucratic layer of private insurance companies and just essentially expands Medicare to cover everybody. Both of those states, incidentally, border Canada, which has that kind of a system, a single-payer system, and apparently that kind of a system looks good from up close. But for the country as a whole, today was a landmark day. Today was a victory for policy, for the now apparently totally partisan notion that if we see problems, systemic problems in our country, we should try to solve them using our constitutional small-d democratic representative American system of government. It was a historic plant a flag, state your position day today, a declaration that politics is for something other than just for fighting. It's for policy. It is for trying to tackle and surmount even our most entrenched problems. Now, politically today, there is, of course, a freakout on the right. There is much strategizing on the left. We'll have much more on that to come over the course of this hour. Institutionally, the court itself has avoided what looked like an impending crisis of caricatured, raw partisanship in that branch of government. But big picture, on a historic day, it's worth looking at the biggest possible picture, right? And big picture, this is a simple, strong, good thing. If you believe in the simple, strong, good idea that as a country, we can solve our problems through the American system that we've got. We can solve problems using what the founders gave us, which is a constitutionally defined representative system of, yes, government through which we shape solutions. The political process, for all of its nonsense and static, is here to produce policy. Policy to solve problems, even the big problems.
All right, I just got through watching a movie off of my iTunes called Outland in the Early 80s with Sean Connery. I used to remember liking it a lot back then, and it was still okay, even though the effects and, you know, they looked a little out of date now. And Netflix is back. And I'm looking at the movies that are at the top of my instant watch queue. Mammoth, multi-layer India drama. This is with Gael Garcia Bernal and Michelle Williams. these movies are about ready to disappear. I'm not sure exactly what the business model is on Netflix, but they shuttle them in and out. The other movie that's, let's see, on my list is Disappearances with Kris Kristofferson, William Sanderson, Louis Guzman, 2006, desperate to save his farm, a grizzled cattleman. Gosh, I wonder who plays that. Hatches a smuggling plot that spans the U.S.-Canada border. What, something about Prohibition, huh? All right, and then the other one, I think, that is disappearing the top of my instant watch queue is Eyewitness, Jeff Daniels, James Spader, Portia de Rossi, from 2003. Now, that's in standard definition. And I think there's one more that I put atop the queue because it's going to be shuttling off of the instant playlist come July 1. The Air I Breathe with Kevin Bacon, Julie Delpy, Brandon Fraser, Andrew Garcia, Sarah Michelle Gellar. A banker discovers true happiness, a mobster finds hope, a celebrity sees life lost its luster, and a doctor wrestles with matters of heart. All right, now, so those are the top movies in my instant watch queue, and probably no way I'm going to get to them in the next couple of days. So I'm signing off. Okay, hasta luego, muchachos.